history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that need to be told. We aim to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The story we're going to hear today definitely has inspirational power, but it also comes with a reality that I've never had to deal with in 15 years of interviewing World War II veterans. I want to share this up front so nothing is misleading today, and I guess I need to explain that the interviews you hear on Hometown Heroes are recorded ahead of time, usually a week or two before you hear them on the radio. And just as I was getting ready to distribute this week's program to our affiliate stations, I received word that the World War II veteran you're going to hear from today, Dr. Bill Cott of Anaheim, California, had passed away on Wednesday, January 8th, 3 months shy of his 98th birthday, and just 8 days after we sat down with him to record his story. With his family's permission, we're going to share that conversation with you today, and I guess it underscores something that's always been a driving force for this program and so many parallel efforts around the country to preserve veteran stories. It's the urgency. If we wait too long, these stories and the value they present for our present and our future will be gone. I know some of you listening right now have veterans in your family, and you've thought, maybe I should ask so-and-so about what happened way back when. Well, I hope you'll act on that inclination and not put it off. Dr. Bill Cott survived the Battle of the Bulge. He witnessed evidence of horrendous atrocities at the Buchenwald concentration camp. And when he came back from World War II, he got married, started a family, and went on to become a dentist, then an oral surgeon, and even went back to school to become a medical doctor. He was on the city council in Anaheim and even spent some time as mayor pro tem. But as always, we tried to start the conversation at the beginning, when Bill was the only child of German immigrants growing up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was very unique. It was Depression years. Things were tight, tough to get a job, very tough. I moved out on my own when I was 16. I had a few sleepless nights, but I finally found a room. I found a job. You may not know this. I doubt that you do, but the work week before World War II was 48 hours, and the pay was 30 cents an hour. So I worked all week, 48 hours, for $16.
What kind of work were you doing?
It was in a department store. I was stock boy. Then the war came along. I figured, boy, maybe that's a good deal for me. I get clothing. I only had one change of clothes. And I get clothing, medical care, and friends. So the next thing I knew, I was in the Army. I went to various places. One place was a citadel where I learned a lot. They sent me there, I guess because of a psychological test I took. Then they sent me to the University of Maine. And while at Maine, I met my wife. We decided to correspond and so on.
What was it about her that caught your eye? What do you remember about meeting her?
Oh, she was a very attractive girl, intelligent, and I just liked her. And I transferred around to various camps. I found myself in France with Patton. I was assigned to the Third Army. We had a few skirmishes there.
Let me take you back a little bit. I'm curious about this because a lot of people seem to remember a specific date and where they were and how they heard about it and what it meant to them. But December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, do you have any memories of that news?
Not really.
Okay.
Because I wasn't living a normal life. It was just another day for me. I just don't remember, except we all thought it was a terrible thing, and we knew that war was imminent even before it happened. We knew we were going to be at war.
And I'm curious, too, especially in light of everything you've accomplished in your life It's not most people who have gotten a dental degree and then become an oral surgeon and then gone back to school to become a medical doctor. That's a pretty unique combination. And if you tell people, oh, yeah, he'd left home as a teenager, then it's a little even more shocking. So I'm curious, when you left home as that teenager, what were your ideas? What were your ambitions and dreams?
Well, I didn't drop out of school.
You graduated early.
High school.
At age 16?
Yeah. Well, I had just turned 17. April and May, I graduated. I went to a school that was called Central High School. They didn't give you a diploma. They gave you a degree. It was endowed by the state of Pennsylvania. They taught only foreign languages, English, math, and things like that. No commercial, no industrial courses. So I have a good record high school. Well, the degree is here somewhere.
With a few others and, that you've earned since.
Among five others.
So did you have ambitions or thoughts of medicine at that young an age?
No. My ambition was to get a place to live so I could be a human being. I wasn't happy roaming the streets of Philadelphia wondering what's going to happen to me because I had nobody. So the Army put me in shape. I had a family and a place to live.
So it wasn't a difficult adjustment for you to get used to the Army way of life?
It's always difficult because your freedoms are really taken away. You have to abide by what they tell you. And that's okay. It was all good stuff then. What it's like today, I don't know.
You know, sorry for bouncing around, but another question that occurred to me. You know, most of us alive today, and most of the people listening to this, didn't live through the Great Depression. And we live in a world where you have one of these devices, the world is at your fingertips every instant. What's the biggest difference you see between today and those times there? And is there some perspective that you have from living through those times?
The biggest difference is that people then were more genuine than they are today. When I grew up, it was a sin to tell a lie. You didn't talk about it. You knew it was a lie, and you just shut up. That's what we were told. People today, you can't believe them. You know, I don't believe anybody unless I know it to be a fact, because that was inculcated into me to be straightforward and honest about things. And that's the way it was in those years. You had to abide by your fellow citizens.
And what was your wife's name?
Eleanor.
So you said you met her in Maine.
Maine.
You wrote letters and stayed in touch while you went
overseas? Oh, yeah, as well as we could. Mm-hmm. It wasn't easy. I was moving around quite a bit.
Did you already have that thought in your mind that you may come back and marry her?
Well, it was a possibility.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
So then you head overseas. What were your specific duties in the Army? What did they have you doing?
Infantryman. It's that simple. An infantryman is an infantryman. I had a rifle, I had a bayonet, and I killed people.
Did you feel that your training prepared you for what you ended up encountering?
Oh, yeah. We had good training, good equipment. Everything was terrific.
And what's your first memory of combat, a welcome to the war kind of moment?
First of all, to answer that, I have to describe the atmosphere, sort of. Do you know where the Battle of the Bulge was?
You betcha. It was happening right now, 75 years ago.
Where?
Well, in a lot of places. My grandfather was at Bastogne, which was one of the wars.
Bastogne.
Where they were
cut
off.
Where I was. Yeah. I was at Bastogne. What country is that?
That would be Belgium.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you're one of the few people. He knows that.
You're quizzing me, huh?
The Bulge was in Belgium. I was in Bastogne, and every day, and I mean every day, there was not one nice day. It snowed, cold, rain, hail. It was terrible. Now, when you watch television today, you see them coming down, going into for breakfast, and so on. We didn't have that. We were living like animals. We ate out of a can, no latrine. We went where we could. No place to sleep, under a truck or a tank. Patton was a tank guy. It was like living like an animal for a year. And the weather was terribly cold. It was the coldest winter on record in Europe in 1944.
Well, let's just stay right there with those conditions, because most of us have never dealt with that. And you just described that you're living like animals. Were you able to dig foxholes, or was the ground too hard?
No, we didn't dig foxholes. We slept in a truck or under a truck or in a tank or wherever we could. And every night there was a different password. The password was usually some well-known American like, you say babe, and if they didn't say Ruth, they're dead. There was no question. You just shoot them. And Patton did not want any prisoners. He said, you're in the army. If you don't kill them, they'll kill you. So take your choice. And so if they didn't have the right password, that's it. That's what we had to do throughout Belgium. And then we went into Germany, of course. And I could tell you about that if you want to hear it.
Of course I do. But before we wrap up this, you know, discussion about the weather, you just said it. It was the coldest winter on record for
decades.
That's right. How did you personally experience that? Did you deal with frostbite in your fingers
or
toes?
No, I was very fortunate. See, I was young. Everybody was young. That's the only reason we survived. If you and I would go there now, we'd die. You're young. They did supply good clothing, good equipment. We had everything we needed except a restaurant, food, latrine. There was nowhere to sleep. It rained. You just had nowhere to go. You just had a piece of stay out there.
But the weather wasn't the only thing that could kill you. You had the German army on the other side with their artillery and their small arms fire.
Yeah.
Eventually planes flying over that could drop bombs. I'm sure there are mortars, landmines. What were some of the hazards that you became all too familiar with?
Well, gunfire. It was close-up stuff.
I'm guessing, knowing the nature of what you did and having spoken to a lot of men who were in similar positions to you, that at some point you had to deal with the reality that guys around you were getting wounded and killed.
Well, we all had a job to do. We didn't pay much attention to other people, of course, unless they needed help or something. In France, there was a group of us standing on a hill, and there was a church right there beside us. Suddenly, I heard some voices down in the valley. I looked down. There's about 75 Germans. So I said to the guys, follow me. And I ran up into the church. The belfry was there and so on. And we had a distinct advantage shooting down at them. And we killed them all because they were coming up the hill. They didn't have a chance. So that's the only time, you know, you really have contact with others. But there's contacts from time to time. No one complained. If they were wounded, medics would come and just take them.
And you were never wounded?
No. Very lucky.
I imagine you may have had some close calls.
Oh, yeah. There were close calls.
Care to share any of those stories that you remember?
No. No, there were close calls. That's enough, you know, stuff for overhead. And what's there to say? Bullets going by. I just did what I had to do, and I think I did a pretty good job. The French gave me that plaque. They sent an ambassador over after the war and gave me that plaque for saving that church for them.
If you go to hometownheroesradio.com, you can find a photo of Bill Cott with the French Legion of Honor medal pinned on him. You'll find a short video of Bill as well. And there are more photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, including one from the 1960s when Dr. Cott and his wife Eleanor hosted a Hollywood actor turned would-be politician that you may just recognize. Before we're done today, we're going to hear from Dr. Cott's son as well. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.